The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30.
Today is Earth Day, and Friends of the Earth ran a conference to mark it. The focus was Ireland 2030, faster and fairer climate action. John Sweeney, Emeritus Professor in Climate at Maynooth University, is with us. But first, Oisin Coughlan is Chief Executive of Friends of the Earth. Is there a sense that there's the beginning of something of a public backlash against the desire of those in charge to get us to do things to deal with climate change, that you now hear politicians saying that too much has been forced upon people too quickly, that you particularly have farming lobbies and others saying that too much has been expected of people, and that this may be reflected in forthcoming local and European elections?
Well, we did some research with Ireland Thinks, the polling company, very much to kind of try to answer that question for today's conference. And it looks like while there are vocal interest groups and vocal people who are expressing some of those views around the imposition of climate action, and politicians are responsive to it, that doesn't seem to be reflected in the general public opinion. As in, people are as worried about climate change. People think it's a serious problem as much as they did 2 years ago, 3 years ago. They think it's a priority, should be a priority. It's for 20% of people, it's in the top three issues for their voting intentions in the European election, which is the third issue in the list after housing and immigration, or immigration and housing in that case. And 47% of people think it's a big problem and the government, we're not doing enough to tackle it. So
do you think that the voices that we hear are outliers, that they're not representative of mainstream opinion?
I think there's two things going on. There are people have real concerns, and there are more people expressing real concerns than before because more action is happening. And then something else happens on top of that. Some politicians sense an opportunity, like a wedge issue, and they go to make the most of that. They don't try to solve the issue, they go to make a political point and political opportunity from it. And then the media, because they're in the business of news, thinks this is a story, something different's happening here. So if I take you back 5 years by way of analogy, probably it's true that Greta Thunberg and the climate strikes didn't actually represent a mass movement of people in Ireland or in Europe. They represented a genuine concern. That was probably overinterpreted by politicians. And this, I think, is a real risk that this would be overinterpreted by politicians, because the squeaky wheel right now are people who are concerned about the short-term impacts of action. Whereas underneath that, the public opinion is moving solidly towards, we need to tackle this issue. Climate change is real, it's getting worse, and we need to tackle it. And so the politicians should take heart from today's findings and hold their nerve, but find ways to bring people with them.
But Oisin, could it be that while people want something to be done, they want it to be done by other people, that they don't want things to happen which they would regard as impacting on the quality and standard of their living, and also that they might be required to pay for?
Well, the data is more complex than that. It certainly shows people want the government to spend money to make this easier rather than ban things or rather than prohibit things. So if you look at the issue of transport, for example, we ask questions on transport. I was surprised by this because, again, politicians go on about roads a lot. 53% of people want the government to continue investing twice as much in new public transport as over new roads, compared to 6% who strongly oppose that. So 53% strongly support that, 6% strongly oppose that. And interestingly though as well, two-thirds of people thought the grants for EVs should be targeted mostly at those in rural areas who have a higher dependence on their cars. And far fewer than 66% live in rural Ireland. So that was a kind of a solidarity sense. I might like a grant myself, but actually they should go to other people. And we found that before when we looked at things like grants for retrofitting. Again, people thought they should go to those most risk of fuel poverty. So they were happy for the government to spend money, and I guess they realised that means that, you know, that means taxes as well. But a lot of practical measures were getting support, lots of support for farmers being given the help they needed too.
But a lot of the correspondence we get from listeners as well is that they believe that the self-flagellation that goes on here in Ireland is unnecessary, because they say that far less than 1% of global emissions are responsible or Ireland is responsible for those. So why should we be imposing restrictions upon ourselves when the rest of the world continues on its merry way?
Well, first of all, the rest of the world isn't continuing on the rest of its merry way. There is a huge energy transition going on around the world. There are economic opportunities and economic benefits from that. And of course, there's the benefit of trying to contain climate change. I will be hearing from Professor Sweeney about the latest report showing how real that impact is. And no one's asking Ireland to do more than its fair share. We haven't been doing our fair share for much of the last 20 years. We've begun to make more of a serious effort. We had seven political parties at the conference today, all of whom voted for the climate law, all of whom have accepted we need to play our part in the Paris Agreement, play our part in reducing emissions, but want to do it in a way that actually meets people where they're at, addresses their everyday material concerns as well, whether that's transport or warm homes. And I think there is a way to do it. It's not good. Look, there's no point in pretending there's no disruption here. But basically, judging by where we are in the world right now with climate, we either face some disruption now because it's taken us so long to get going, or we face destruction down the line if we don't act now. So there's no sort of status quo, business as usual option available to us.
John Sweeney, Professor John Sweeney from Anews, do we face destruction in the future? Because this is something, again, a lot of listeners say, is that we're exaggerating the effect of global warming and the impact that it's going to have on our lives.
Well, I think the Copernicus report from the EU today has kind of disabused people of that. What we've seen, for example, is that Europe is now the fastest warming continent. It's warming 2.3 degrees in the past, over pre-industrial levels over the past 5 years, not 1.3 like the rest of the world. So we are facing a faster rate of climate change. We've had our largest ever wildfire in Europe, which has destroyed an area the size of County Dublin last year. We've seen that, for example, the marine heat wave off the west coast, 5 degrees warmer than hitherto experienced. We've seen catastrophic flooding, not just in Europe, but here in Ireland. So we are actually facing here in Ireland an existing problem of climate change, not something for the future. And I feel that the Irish population, as Oisin is saying there, the Irish population are ahead of their political leaders in appreciating that if we don't do something in the short term and leave it for the next generation and think we're off the hook, then we're only going to face higher and higher costs. We've already spent 500 billion euros in Europe over the past 40 years coping with climate extremes and weather extremes. That's only going to increase further. And it means that the Irish taxpayer is going to have to dig deeper in the future to cope with those increasing frequency of extremes that we're now seeing.
Yeah, but can that be true mitigation rather than actually reducing existing standards of living? In that, for example, the Dutch have a whole series of dams and dikes to make sure that they don't flood, and have had it for a century at this stage, that we can do things using new technologies and new constructions to deal with what might be an inevitable climate change, which may not be reversed the way things are going.
Yes, we have to do all of that. But unless we pull our weight internationally as well, then we're not going to receive any sympathy from our friends and colleagues around the world. Irish emissions currently are 5 times on a per capita basis what the developing world is. They're 50% above the EU average. So we are, in fact, among the biggest culprits in causing climate change. And we have no credibility. India and China are saying to us here in Ireland, we are doing more than you in Ireland are doing to reduce and tackle our emissions. So yes, we have to adapt. And we know we've spent something like 300 million, I think, over the past few years in tackling flooding. That's a drop in the ocean compared to what we may have to face if we don't tackle this problem seriously in the next few years. So there is no way that we can simply palm off this problem as minor. It's now here, and we have to tackle it in a realistic and radical way. And I think, to go back to my point, the Irish population know this. They are willing to take a long-term view. It's our politicians who want to take a short-term view over the next few weeks in case they lose a few votes at the election.
Because, Oisin, it strikes me, we had a citizens' assembly on biodiversity, which came up with, after hearing all of the evidence from the experts, this group of people drawn from all sections of society, endorsed a report which wanted to make combating biodiversity change a major issue. What has been done by the government since?
It hasn't moved as fast as the climate Citizens Assembly moved in 2018, 2019, partly because the vibes are different at the moment. But there has been some progress. A joint Oireachtas committee, as was the case with climate and the Eighth Amendment before that, has taken those recommendations and done a report for government saying, they kind of translated it into policy speak, basically. And the government has done a new national action plan on biodiversity. But my colleagues in the likes of Birdwatch and Antashka don't think it's strong enough. And we have seen a bit more investment. The National Parks and Wildlife Service, which was ravaged during the austerity years, has rebuilt its capacity slowly but surely. But yes, we are like the climate and biodiversity...
they are closely aligned.
Aligned. And we're not seeing quite the same focus on nature as we have been on climate. And I would say there's one other thing that, just building what John said, is that one big benefit of the shift away is at the moment we import so much of our energy in terms of fossil fuels. And we know now, if we didn't know before, that with the likes of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, suddenly it gets very expensive, it gets very volatile, it gets unsure, supply lines become unsure, and we are sitting on this massive resource of renewable energy, already providing us with 40% of electricity, and with the potential to provide far more, indeed we could be exporting it. That's a far safer option in the future.
Yeah, what really has upset me in the past few weeks in particular has been the caving in of the European institutions on this topic. We've seen the complete abandonment for the time being of the Nature Restoration Law, which I think would have been a great benefit to biodiversity in Ireland. We've seen more recently the European Parliament effectively gutting the common agricultural policy of many of the environmental measures that it proposed to take. And even last week, we saw the European Commission changing its five-year strategy from what it had before, which had climate change up there as one of the foreground issues, to one which is all about bullets and business, and climate change and sustainability hardly gets a mention.
Actually, I just want to finish to put the same question to both of you. It's been put by a listener, and it's a good question, because we've had a lot of controversy recently about the expansion of Dublin Airport. Should the capacity go beyond 32 million passengers per annum? Should there be an additional terminal now that we have two runways? Should we cap flights at 32 million passengers a year in Dublin Airport, Oisin?
It's a crude measure, but until there's something better, yes, we'll have to. Ultimately, we need either, because so much of the flying that is damaging is the frequent flyer by business class. Whereas the one summer holiday by a family is not so much of an issue. So we need a pricing structure. We need a regulatory structure, and ultimately we may need some sustainable fuels. But in the meantime, until we have some sort of broader system, we can't keep growing the way we are. There should be a cap.
What you said,
yeah, it's so damaging that I believe until we get a sustainable fuel policy for aviation, then we do have to do rather drastic measures. But perhaps it should be seen also in the context of regional development. Having people travelling from extreme parts of Ireland to Dublin Airport is itself a source of considerable transport emissions. So I think we have to look at it in the round. But I think for the moment, really, we should draw the line, because aviation and especially business travel is taking up so much of our emissions and so damaging to our climate that we can't simply ignore it and continue in business.
But what about our tourism industry, all the inbound tourists we want as well?
Well, we have to make hard choices. I don't think this is going to necessarily affect... I don't think it will affect the person who makes the occasional holiday. It's really the person who's in a plane every day of the week sometimes, and every frequent flyer who's using Dublin Airport almost as a commuter.
We have to develop the slow travel options. I do fly sometimes, but last year we took our family holiday by ferry to Bilbao from Dublin. And I said that was a lovely trip, and you just build that cruise into your holiday.
Oisin Colan from Friends of the Earth, John Sweeney, Emeritus Professor in Climate at Maynooth University, thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.